It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Podcasts and recaps of the shows can be found there. And really excited about the show that we have planned for you today. It's brought to you by the Harris family. But be sure and go over to the website and check out the Headlines for Hope. It is the story. Actually, we're going to redo that. It'll be a little bit later in the day, and it'll be the story of Joe P. Martinez, who was a Medal of Honor winner, or not winner, award. He was awarded the Medal of Honor in World War II. And first segment, we'll talk with Chris Cantwell about buying and selling businesses. And then Ben Martin will be on for three segments regarding important speeches and documents, America's founding heritage. We'll be talking about George Washington. So you want a little inspiration, you won't want to miss that. As we look at these issues, as we go through these headlines, Rudyard Kipling has said it. He says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. So as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. We are seeing that those that really want to force their agendas on our lives are using fear to do that. So it's actually also freedom versus fear, fear versus freedom. Socialism ultimately has to come down to force. We've seen this movement of trying to move America to socialism. And with Donald Trump, we were seeing a real pushback on that with this COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption that's going on. We're getting a view of what socialism looks like, and it doesn't look very good. Empty shelves, supplies plummeting, people losing jobs. This is what socialism looks like. And then government, PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, the elite, they come in and they seem to be doing fine. You'll notice that these government officials and these bureaucrats are not losing their jobs. They're not having their pay cut. While over here, hardworking, everyday people are losing their businesses and their jobs because of the decisions of these particular PBIs. And so we're getting a look at socialism, and it's not very much fun. I want to say thank you to this great team I work with, to Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your support and your good work. And to each of you listeners, thank you. You're each treasured and valued as well. Today, do something productive. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Now, Steve, this is a really interesting inspiration slash wisdom quote that I got today. This is by Frederick Lewis Donaldson, and he was the canon of Westminster from 1924 to 1951. He held the offices of steward, treasurer, and archdeacon, as well as being subdean, and he became the first canon emeritus of Westminster after his retirement. He was born in 1860 and died in 1953. His ashes are buried at Westminster Abbey. He says there are seven social sins: wealth without work, pleasure without conscience, knowledge without character, commerce without morality, science without humanity, worship without sacrifice, and politics without principle.
Guilty.
What do you think of that?
Guilty.
Wow. Ha. Isn't that something?
Man.
This culture. We as a society are guilty of that for sure. So our funnies, are you ready for that? Okay, here we go. Nail salons, hair salons, and waxing centers, tanning places, they're all closed. And it's about to get ugly. Ha. Speaking of getting ugly, did you see this, that Donald Trump announced yesterday via executive order that he is temporarily going to suspend immigration into the United States? It appears to be a drastic escalation in his efforts to fight for the coronavirus or to fight the coronavirus pandemic and to boost the economy. The declaration came hours after the equity markets plunged, oil prices turned negative for the first time in history. We'll talk with Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, about that. And also on Monday, they said there's three states, Georgia, Tennessee, and South Carolina, that have revealed plans to begin reopening some of their businesses. He says, in light of the attack from the invisible enemy, as well as the need to protect the jobs of our great American citizens, I will be signing an executive order to temporarily suspend immigration into the United States, the president tweeted. What do you think about that, Steve?
It makes me want to cry. Here it is, a very common sense move basically done on behalf of people who are looking for work now, and he's going to get crucified for this. They're going to hang him out to dry.
But once again, I think that it brings back the veil on the real agenda of these globalists. And so it's going to be a very interesting day for sure as we see the press go after him. I can't wait to take a look at his press conference later today. And just to keep you up to date, the number of deaths attributed to coronavirus in Colorado are 449. And total in the U.S. is 41,313. Steve, I'm starting to hear more anecdotal comments about people that have died, that they're putting the cause as COVID-19 when family members clearly feel that it is something different. And so as we look at these numbers that have been trumpeted across our screens, we're just bombarded with them all the time, we want to make sure that they're being truthful. And once you start to have questions about that, and of course we've had questions about the data and the modeling now, you know, you have to wonder, was this really necessary to shut down the economy? Next thing, Governor Polis says that he is outlining an initial plan for lifting some of the restrictions, allowing certain businesses to open, because his stay-at-home order is going to expire on Sunday. But he said that he's going to keep some restrictions in place. So I'm encouraged that he is actually starting to indicate that he has a plan. But, you know, I think real leadership would be that he would have been working with business leaders up to this point and have a definite plan on how this is going to happen and have that communicated to business leaders. I talked to a businessman this last weekend. He said, we want to know what the plan is. We need to understand what's going on. This limbo kind of stuff is very difficult for business people. And I'm not sure if these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties understand that the revenue that they need for their programs comes from the labors of everyday hardworking people. And when you shut down that economy, that is going to shut down that revenue stream as well. Of course, we did talk about it just a little bit yesterday. It looks like Governor Polis is trying to hijack the money that came out of the CARES Act to go to communities, municipalities, tribes, and it looks like he's going to try to hijack that money and possibly use it to balance the Colorado budget, and that is not what that money was used for. One other thing before we get to Chris Cantwell with business, Transworld Business Advisors, is this is from the Federalist. It says, police departments across the country are resorting to the use of drone surveillance to enforce social distancing in both public and private spaces during statewide shelter-in-place borders. And a Chinese company known as Dajing Innovations donated these types of drones to 43 law enforcement agencies in 23 states. One of those was Colorado. So, my friends, just to connect the dots, we can't get Governor Polis to come out with a plan on how to open us back up. But he has taken, because they were donated to him, Chinese drones to spy on you, while over here they're letting criminals out of our jails and prisons. So you tell me this is about caring about us? Not so much. So let's go to Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors. Chris Cantwell, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. How are you?
I am good. Now, it looks like we're going to start to get Colorado back to work, which I know you're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the damage will be somewhat minimal. But, you know, it's tough out there. I think for the small business owners, hopefully you've all been checking in with your banks on the Paycheck Protection Program. We know that it was funded for a short time, and then a lot of people were in line waiting for their checks to come, and it hasn't happened, and the government ran out of money, and we know all that craziness that's going on there. But hopefully you small business owners out there are talking with your bankers and trying to get an update, making sure you have all your paperwork in correctly, all those things. The Colorado SBDC, Small Business Development Center, has some information on what to do. And then we have some information on our website, which is tworlddenver.com. We have a resource page that we try to keep updated with information. So if you're out there as a business owner and trying to understand what to do next, feel free to go to our website. And, of course, you can always get my information off of Kim's website. And we have some information there. You know, feel free to reach out to me. I can try to guide you or direct you in the right place as well. And then as far as, you know, what's going to happen next, businesses are going to start to come back online and start to open back up. And, you know, there's still business owners out there that are going to need to sell, whether it's retirement or it's just time. There's going to be distressed businesses out there that need to sell. There's some businesses right now that are thriving due to this situation. And, you know, it's going to be the look back period that kind of defines what the value of businesses will be going forward. So once we get back to the open phase and we look at the next few months, it'll be that'll kind of be the decision maker in terms of the value of your business and how much of an impact this kind of quote unquote one time non-recurring event has taken in as far as your business and the revenue and the profits and things like that. It, you know, this time period can be looked at as a one-time non-recurring event. So a lot of unknowns, a lot of questions out there.
Well, and you know, Chris, I think that there's always opportunity in this. I remember back when in the 80s, when the oil markets had really, or the energy markets had really, really got knocked around. I had a friend that had been a geologist in the oil and gas business, and he ended up starting a business or buying business, I can't remember. But he built that into something super, super successful and then was able to sell that. So I want to encourage people out there that may have lost their job and may not see that coming back right now, that maybe if they look at a different industry and buy a business, it actually could turn out very, very well. So there can always be opportunity, even when it looks like the clouds are pretty dark out there, Chris.
Yep, I agree, Kim. There will be a lot of opportunity. We've currently got about 200, a little over 200 listings available now. You know, there might be some industries out there that are really interesting to people that are starting to look to become entrepreneurs. Some things that people have never thought about, but when you get an opportunity to kind of shop on our website or feel free to call me and get some more information on some of these businesses that are available. There's different pricing. There's different SBA programs that have recently been introduced to help people get the financing needed to buy businesses. There's 401k deferrals. There's all kinds of stuff that's going on that should help entice people to buy these businesses that are going to be available.
So how can people reach you, Chris Cantwell, with Transworld Business Advisors?
Yep, you can get my information from your website, kimmonson.com, or you can call me at 844-SELL-BIZ, B-I-Z, SELL-BIZ, 844-SELL-BIZ.
Okay, Chris Cantwell, thank you so much. And hopefully next week when we talk, Colorado will be back open for business. So we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Kim. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin. You know him. He's a former Army Ranger. He is an expert on our patriotic history. And we'll be talking about some important speeches and documents of the American founding. And you won't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. For those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Podcasts and recaps of the show can be found there. And very excited to have on the line with me my good friend. You know him, Ben Martin. He is a former Army Ranger. He is a patriotic historian. And each month we're going through some of the important speeches and documents of the American founding. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. We're very grateful for that as well. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Kim. I'm so happy to be here today with you. Even though we're not really together, we feel like we are.
We're social distancing over the show. How's that?
That sounds great.
But let's go ahead and jump right in here, because it is important for people to hear this. You know, people are just totally bombarded with this COVID-19 stuff and what's going on with the economy. And it's not, you know, there are other times in our history it hasn't been easy, where people had their lives on the line for freedom and what they were going to pass on to the next generation. And George Washington was one such guy. So let's go ahead. You had chosen four different things that we wanted to talk about.
Sure. And we're going to start today. We're just going to talk about the last part of George Washington's civil service and his last part of his life, and that is when he was elected president. So these are all revolving around his presidency. And we're going to talk first about his first inaugural, which was the first inaugural of any president. It was the first inaugural in the United States of America. And we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about some of that valedictory advice that he gave to everyone through this great speech called Farewell, his George Washington's farewell address. And then finally, we're going to talk a little bit about what people thought after he left the world. And we'll talk about some of those eulogies that were given in his memory.
So, okay.
Go ahead. All righty. So let's talk about the inaugural. His first inaugural, the first inaugural in the United States. And the Constitution of the United States, as we know, was ratified by the states in June of 1788. That's when nine states had finally ratified the Constitution so it could be put into effect. So in February of 1789, the nation's Electoral College unanimously selected George Washington to be the first president. On April 14th, he didn't know about that. Obviously, we didn't have CNN or Fox News or any 24-hour services, so he didn't know about it. So on 14 April 1789, Washington was making his usual rounds of his field when Charles Thompson, the Secretary of the Continental Congress. Now, Charles Thompson was a great American and patriot himself, and he had been Secretary of the Continental Congress from the time that it first started in 1775 until the present time, until it ended in 1789. And so he arrived at Mount Vernon with a letter from John Langdon, who was the president pro tempore of the Senate, to tell Washington he had been elected president of the United States. Well, that was kind of a shock to him, although he was hoping, I'm sure, that he would be elected. So one of the first things he did after hearing that was that he went to visit his mother, who lived in Fredericksburg. She was 80 years of age and suffering for an incurable disease. And this was a touching meeting for them. And I don't think many people have heard this story before. But when leaving her, he promised her that as soon as the public business will allow, I will hasten back to see you. You will see me no more, she said. My great age and this disease warn me that I shall not be long in this world. The dutiful son stooped and kissed her. When he took her hands, he said, she said, Go, George, fulfill the high destinies which heaven appears to have assigned you. Go, my son, and may that heaven and your mother's blessings be with you always. And they would never again meet because she died in August of 1789 at the age of 82. So I think that's a real touching story, and to see what he did when it was announced to him that he was going to be the president.
You know, and so he truly loved it. I remember a quote, Ben Martin, Washington really loved his mother. I remember there was some quote about that he thought she was, you know, one of the most beautiful women that lived. He just really, really loved his mother.
Yes, he really did. And this is just one of those examples to show how much he really did love her. And so after that, he started his journey to New York City. And it took him 7 days to get there. It was a triumphal procession with crowds and local officials greeting the new president-elect all along the way. Celebrations erupted in numerous towns along that route, including Alexandria, Baltimore, Wilmington, Philadelphia, and Trenton. When he finally arrived in Elizabethtown, New Jersey, on 23 April, there was a ceremonial barge there to meet him. It was made by the citizens of New York City. And that barge was built expressly by those citizens, and they rode it across with George Washington in it with 13 pilots, all dressed in white, to represent the 13 states. A committee of 3 senators and 5 representatives were also there. And so he went across. Now, this is, as we said before, this is 23 April. But then Washington had to remain in his New York residence for a week while the House and Senate decided the details of what was going to happen at this formal inauguration. And we get most of this stuff from William McClay, who was a lawyer, and one of Pennsylvania's U.S. senators. He kept a diary of his experiences during the inaugural. So now it's 7 days later, so on 30 April 1789, Washington was escorted to the Federal Hall on Wall Street and into the Senate chamber. There with Washington were Vice President Adams, the senators, and the representatives of the new United States Congress. They then stepped out of the chamber onto a balcony overlooking the street, which was filled with a cheering crowd. As there were yet no Supreme Court justices, the oath of office was to be administered by a chancellor, Robert Livingston. Now, you remember Robert Livingston. Now he's the New York's highest-ranking judge. But a few years ago, he was on the Committee of Five with Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, and he was one of the 5 people that were commissioned to draft the Declaration of Independence. So then the Bible was brought. They didn't have a Bible at first, and so Jacob Martin, who was at the time the master of St. John's Lodge, which was just right in the neighborhood, he had to run across and get the altar Bible from St. John's Lodge because they had forgotten to bring a Bible. So when he brought the Bible and the ceremony proceeded, Washington took the oath with his right hand on the Bible, which, by the way, was open to Genesis 49 and 50. His head was bowed in a reverential manner. He added in a clear, distinct voice after taking the oath, "I swear, so help me God." Then, bowing over the magnificent Bible, he reverently kissed it, whereupon Chancellor Livingston exclaimed in a ringing voice to the crowd, "Long live George Washington, President of the United States." And after taking the oath, Washington and the others returned to the Senate chamber, where the new president gave a short speech. He started by saying, "Fellow citizens of the Senate and House of Representatives, among the vicissitudes incident to life, no event could have filled me with greater anxiety than that of which the notification was transmitted by your order and received on 14 April. On the one hand, I was summoned by my country, whose voice I can never hear but with veneration and love." And that's a famous quote that George Washington has been associated with throughout his whole time and throughout his whole history. "I was summoned by my country, whose voice I can never hear but with veneration and love." And on the other hand, the magnitude and difficulty of the trust to which my country called me, being sufficient to awaken in the wisest and most experienced of her citizens a distrustful scrutiny into his own qualifications, could not but overwhelm me. Inheriting the inferior endowments from nature and unpracticed in the duties of civil administration, ought to be peculiarly conscious of his own deficiencies. Here he is being deferential and being humble, saying that, you know, I don't think I have the abilities necessary to handle this great honor that you have given me. And he said again, such being the impression under which I have repaired to the present station, it would be peculiarly improper to omit in this first official act my fervent supplication to that almighty being who rules over the universe, who proceeds in the councils of nations, and whose providential aids can supply every human defect, that his benediction may consecrate to the liberties and happiness of the people of the United States a government instituted by themselves for these essential purposes. So that's talking about self-government and the Constitutional Convention. This is just amazing that he's doing this. And intending this homage to the great author of every public and private good, I assure myself that it expresses your sentiments not less than my own, nor those of my fellow citizens at large, less than either. No people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than the people of the United States. So,
wow.
What homage he pays to God. And we should think about that a lot today.
Oh, my gosh, Ben Martin. Most definitely. We're going to go to break. Just a quick note, Ben Martin. I had spent some time in New York and actually walked past Federal Hall every day, and I didn't really know what it was. It's right across the street from the Stock Exchange.
Right,
and finally,
right.
And I saw a statue of George Washington, and I finally went in. And as I started to understand what was going on, and then I went into the bookstore, and I had so many books that I think I had to pay extra to get my luggage home from that. But it was a pretty exciting thing. But let's go to break. And before we do that, I've got Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management on the line. And I'd been down by the Stock Exchange that day. But the Stock Exchange, the stock market yesterday, crazy stuff, huh, Jason McBride?
Well, yeah, we saw another historical moment yesterday as the futures contract for May delivery for oil dropped down to an actual negative number. I think at one point the futures contract was indicating if you wanted to get rid of any oil, you'd have to pay somebody about $40 a barrel just to take it off your hands.
It's astounding. It is astounding.
Yeah, it's interesting, and, you know, everybody's now trying to figure out why it happened, and some are blaming, you know, a certain, like, ETF or oil fund that buys all kinds of futures contracts. You know, really, when you get to a point, though, Kim, where you've, you know, we produce quite a bit of oil. Well, all the storage is pretty much full at this point. If you have a bunch of something and nobody has anywhere to put it, even if they were to buy it, well, then the problem becomes, how do you get rid of what you have that you need to move? And you might have to pay someone to take it. So, you know, the further out contracts are still, it's actually a positive number on oil. So I don't think we'll be getting paid anytime soon to pull our cars up to the pump and pump the gas back into the ground.
Well, it's an astounding thing. It's just historical. So what about the markets? What are you talking with people about that?
Well, they're still trying to move up, although yesterday was kind of a difficult day, Kim. I mean, the market was down yesterday, struggling with this oil news for most of the day. The Dow was down about 600, sold off right towards the end of the day, which is never a positive sign. And this morning, it looks like we're going to open up, at least where the futures are now, we should open up down about 500. So we may have another tough day here. So now it bears really starting to watch and see. The trading volume on the down days yesterday, it was pretty light, thank goodness. Do we get a big acceleration down, or just a little bit of profit taking and a little wobbliness and then try to move higher? So it's kind of at that turning point now, at least for the short term, Kim.
Okay, well, if you would like to have some help with your investments and your own personal economic well-being, I'd suggest that people reach out to you and your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management, Jason.
Yeah, we've got some really wonderful people that, even though we're kind of remoting from home at this point, we're still ready, willing, and able to help. I've got several fabulous advisors, great guys, great gals, great experience, and great ideas. So I think it'd be your great idea to give us a call at 303-694-1600. Talk to one of our advisors if you have questions, concerns, or maybe just want a second set of eyes on what you've got going on.
That's for sure. That number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one, Kim.
Okay, thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we have our show that's brought to you by the Harris family, and it's Ben Martin, my good friend, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger. We're talking about George Washington, some of the important documents and speeches. We'll be going to his farewell address. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out our website. That's KimMunson, MONSON.com. Podcasts and recaps of the shows can be found there. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. There's a lot of great information there as well. On the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. And we're talking about some of the important documents and speeches in America's founding. Ben Martin, it's so always great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Kim. It's great to be here and to be talking about our country's founder like we are today. I would like to, before we go to the farewell address, I just want to, one of the most important passages, one of the most famous passages in the first inaugural, I was saving that for the last. So if I could, let's just go over that for just a minute so everybody can hear it, because I think it's
perfect.
Very beautiful.
Okay,
so
it.
This George Washington, this is still in his first inaugural address, and he says, "I dwell on this prospect with every satisfaction which an ardent love for my country can inspire, since there is no truth more thoroughly established than there exists in the economy and course of nature an indissoluble union between virtue and happiness, between duty and advantage, between the genuine maxims of an honest and magnanimous policy and the solid rewards of public prosperity and felicity." Felicity, for those out there listening that don't know, is happiness. "Since we ought to be no less persuaded that the propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right, which heaven itself has ordained. And since the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty and the destiny of the Republican model of government are justly considered, perhaps as deeply as finally staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people.
Wow. Very timely for now.
It takes my breath away every time I read it, and I promise you I've read it many times. But yeah. It just does, and that's where he's getting to the crux of the matter, the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty and the destiny of the Republican model of government are all staked on this experiment in self-government that's been entrusted to the hands of the American people.
You know, Ben Martin, just a quick comment. That was certainly George Washington's time, but I feel that this is our time.
Right.
That this American Republic and this American idea is really being challenged right now. And we as Americans, you were an Army Ranger. I have interviewed over 130 World War II veterans. And as I think back about the Patriots and the Civil War and World War I, World War II, all these different wars that we've gone through where people have given blood and treasure to pass on liberty and freedom, the responsible exercise of liberty to the next generation. We stand on the shoulders of giants, and it is now our time, and it is our responsibility to preserve this American Republic as well. So,
that's exactly right, and that's what George Washington said over and over, and so did many of the other patriots that you talked about, too, that it's up to us, that this was given to us. It's like Abraham Lincoln said, we did nothing to get this. We did nothing to obtain this, but it was given to us. And ours is to keep it, to preserve it, and to pass it on to the next generation, which the world will know, as Lincoln so famously said. So let's talk about that, because we're going to talk about the farewell address now. And this gives us a lot of advice that Washington was giving us as he was stepping down from power again. So on 1796, Washington, Philadelphia's largest newspaper, carried a momentous exclusive, introduced without fanfare or editorial comment. The heading simply read, "To the People of the United States," and the text started with the greeting, "Friends and Fellow Citizens." The article was quite lengthy, and its author was not revealed until the end of the article. And it said, G. Washington, United States. It was reprinted by every major newspaper in America, but only one, the Courier of New Hampshire, reprinted it under the title for which it is known today, Washington's Farewell Address. From its beginning, it was revered as one of the great documents of American purpose. James Madison called it the best guide to the distinctive principles of American government. Thomas Jefferson made it primary reading at the University of Virginia. And John Marshall, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said it was President Washington's last effort to impress upon his countrymen those great political truths which had been the guides of his own administration, and maintain that in it were precepts to which American statesmen cannot too frequently recur. The timing of the farewell address was also important to President Washington. The original proof from the first printing was drafted on 17 September 1796, and it was published first in David Claypool's newspaper on 19 September 1796. You see, in 1787, 9 years earlier, the Constitution was first signed and printed on 17 September, and was printed for the first time in newspaper on 19 September. So he timed this the way he wanted it, and this meant a lot to him. So the stated purpose of the valedictory advice was to announce to the nation Washington's unexpected decision to retire from public life and not seek a third term as the president. This was unprecedented, a great leader giving up power voluntarily. Remember, this was not the first time for Washington, for he resigned his commission as the commander-in-chief of the Army a few years earlier. But this was not the only purpose of the address. It was a letter of advice and warning to the American people about their long-term safety and happiness that should get their attention. He said this: "To offer your solemn contemplation and to recommend to your frequent review some sentiments which are the results of much reflection, of no inconsiderable observation, and which appear to me all important to the permanency of your felicity as a people." Today, the advice is not well remembered, not often read, but it's a farewell warning against permanent American involvement in foreign affairs, and it is also much more than that. For in it, he gives well-considered advice, including these subjects: the benefit of our national union, the benefits of our Constitution and rules of law, the dangers of political parties and factions, the benefits of religion and morality, the benefits of education, the dangers of foreign influence in domestic affairs, and, of course, a fond farewell. You know, Kim, when you look at this, this is almost like the Reader Digest version of the Federalist Papers. I mean, he touches on all of those key points in that there, too. And he says, his first purpose, "I should now apprise you." This is to tell him that he is not going to seek a third term. "I should now apprise you of the resolution I have formed to decline being considered among the number of those out of whom a choice is to be made for your presidency." So that's the first thing that he tells him. And then after he goes through about seven paragraphs of this, the whole farewell address is over 6,000 words, and it comprises 50 paragraphs. And so he starts talking about that, and he says, these will be offered to you with the more freedom, as you can only see in them the distinguished warnings of a parting friend who can possibly have no personal motive to bias his counsel to you. And then the first thing he talks about, just as in the Federalist Papers, he talks about union. And he said, "The unity of government, which consists to you one people, is also now dear to you. It is justly so, for it is a main pillar in the edifice of your real independence, the support of your tranquility at home, your peace abroad, of your safety, of your prosperity, of that very liberty which you so highly prize." And then he talks about faction. And he says, "Citizens by birth or choice of a common country, that country has a right to concentrate your affections. The name of America, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any derived from local discriminations. You have the same religion, same manners, habits, political principles. You have in common cause, fought, and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the work of joint efforts of common dangers." So he's telling them, you know, you can't be separated. You can't be thinking more about your states or your party than you can about this union, which gives you all of the prosperity, all of the political prizes that you so much deserve. And you fought for these. This was a joint effort. So you have to take this and take it as being precious and protect it and preserve it. And that's something that we really need to think about today. And then he talks about the rule of law, and he says, to the efficacy and permanency of your union, a government for the whole is indispensable. Respect for the authority of your constitution, of government, and compliance with its laws are duties enjoined by the fundamental maxims of pure liberty. And then he talks about separation, and he says it is important, likewise, that the habits of thinking in a free country would inspire caution in those entrusted with its administration to confine themselves within their respective constitutional spheres, avoiding in the exercise of the powers of one department to encroach upon another. The spirit of encroachment tends to consolidate the powers of all departments in one, and thus to create a real despotism. And then he talks about religion and morality. And he says, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Not they're good things, they are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who would labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for property, for reputation, for life itself, if the sense of religious obligation desert the oaths, which are the instruments of investigation in our courts of justice? And let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of a refined education on the minds of peculiar structure, reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. So those are some really strong words, and that's one of my favorite parts of this farewell address.
Well, Ben Martin, we're going to go to break. I would highly recommend people today to actually, you can pull it up on your computer and read George Washington's farewell address. One comment I wanted to make, when he talks about the rule of law, those laws have to be based within the vision of the Constitution of the United States of America. Every elected official in this nation, when they take elective office, they swear that they will uphold the Constitution. And so the laws that are to be made need to be made within that context of the Constitution. Otherwise, they're not constitutional. And I think that's really important as we are looking what's going on in America right now. Ben Martin, let's go to break. When we come back, we will continue with this great show brought to you by the Harris Family of Important Speeches and Documents of America's Founding Heritage. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
Water's Edge Winery and Bistro is celebrating 5 years in business and is now open Tuesday through Sunday, 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Located near the northwest corner of Arapahoe and University, they are offering to-go food and wine to keep you fed and happy. Call 720-381-6663 to place our curbside to-go order, or stop in and grab your bottles and lunch or dinner. That's 720-381-6663, or follow Water's Edge Winery and Bistro Centennial on Facebook or Instagram for updates and specials.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter there. Podcasts and recaps of the shows can be found there. You'll want to probably go back and listen to this very important show with Ben Martin. He is a former Army Ranger, patriotic historian. The show's brought to you by the Harris family, which we're very grateful for. And Ben Martin, it always goes way too quickly, so let's continue on quickly with a couple of eulogies to Washington. So tell us about that.
Okay, so I'm going to start off, and I'm not going to go in chronological order, but trying to give the effect. So in April of 1814, one of the greatest poets of the time was Lord Byron, and he introduced Washington. He had a great hero in his life, and that was Napoleon. And then when Napoleon abdicated and surrendered to the Allies, it really broke his heart. So he wrote this ode, and it was 20 verses. In the last verse of that, he gives some great honor to our president. And he has already talked about all these different people, but especially Napoleon, and how disappointing Napoleon was. And so this last verse, it just grabs you. And he says, "Where may the weary eye repose when gazing on the great, where neither guilty glory glows nor despicable state? Yes, one, the first, the last, the best, the Cincinnatus of the West, whom envy dared not hate, bequeathed the name of Washington to make men blush, there was but one." And that's just, to me, that's just really beautiful poetry, and it's a beautiful honor to our president and the father of our country. And then I will go, yes, I'm sorry, can we?
No, go ahead, continue on.
Okay, then the other one of the eulogies, which is very important, was on the 110th birthday anniversary of General Washington, or George Washington, and it was by Abraham Lincoln. And he says, "This is the 110th anniversary of the birthday of Washington. We are met to celebrate this day. Washington is the mightiest name of earth, long since mightiest in the cause of human liberty, still mightiest in moral reformation. On that name, a eulogy is expected. It cannot be to add brightness to the sun or glory to the name of Washington is alike impossible. Let none attempt it. In solemn awe, pronounce the name, and in its naked, deathless splendor, leave it shining on."
Wow.
And it's just amazing. And that's Abraham Lincoln. And then the final one that I wanted to give you was the official one given in the Capitol by the Congress. And it was written by General Light Horse Harry Lee. And it was, the full eulogy was 3,500 words. And obviously I'm not going to give those to you today. Hmm. And Lee wrote the eulogy in Philadelphia while staying at Franklin Court, the former home of Benjamin Franklin. And I'm just going to give you the part that's most known. "First in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen, he was second to none in the humble and endearing scenes of private life. Correct throughout, vice shuddered in his presence, and virtue always felt his fostering hand. The purity of his private character gave effulgence or radiance to his public virtues. Such was the man America has lost. such was the man for whom our nation mourns.
You know, Ben, we're just about out of time. We've got a minute left. And so with that, what would be the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
The president, George Washington, loved his country, as can be said over and over again. He loved God, and he loved the citizens of this country. And he gave them such a great example of turning over power twice, something that had never been done before, and in following the Constitution to the letter and telling everybody, these are the things that you need. This farewell address, every American should read it. It is read every year on George Washington's birthday in the United States Congress, and that tradition was started by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, another great crisis in which we were in. And he used this to try to focus America's attention back to the founding principles of our country and the responsibility that we each had as citizens to know what our government was, what our Constitution was, and to follow it. We did nothing to gain this great gift that we have, but our only responsibility is to preserve it and pass it along untarnished to the next generation.
And Ben Martin, that is our responsibility. So today I'd recommend to read George Washington's farewell address. Ben Martin, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Kim. I was happy to be here with you.
Okay, so today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.